Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program IQ Al-Rasooli. IQ is a good friend. He has written a series of books called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. His books, which chronicle what can be known about the formation of Islam, about its wannabe prophet Muhammad, its wannabe God Allah, under topics which makes it extremely easy to study and understand all of the major themes and the consequences of Islam. IQ, who now lives in Europe, was actually born in Iraq and lived there under the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. Is that not true, IQ?
It is true, yes.
Now, America wants to present Saddam Hussein as this tyrannical madman that had to be deposed because he had weapons of mass destruction and he was a terrorist to his own people, and that the only way for there to be peace and harmony and democracy in Iraq was to kill Saddam Hussein. Did that turn out to
be...
they were wrong, weren't they?
They were wrong, totally wrong. Look at the consequences of the events.
You know, that the reason I bring this up is today is the 10th anniversary of the capture of Saddam Hussein. And look at, you know, Americans say, well, you know, Saddam had it coming because he was a really bad guy. Well, when you when you're incapable of thinking and contemplating the consequences of removing somebody from power, then you really ought not state an opinion. Because what was the consequence of taking Saddam Hussein from power?
The destruction of the Middle East, literally.
Yeah.
Allowing Iran to take over Iraq. Allowing Iran to expand its terrorist organizations all over the world. That's what happened.
Yeah, that's the single most brilliant statement that a person can make today in terms of geopolitics. The consequence of America invading Iraq based on a lie was the destruction of the Middle East.
Correct.
And which is ultimately going to lead to the destruction of the world. That's what we did. Yeah, that is that. Yeah, that's what we did. And let's talk about this for a moment. Saddam Hussein was an ally of the United States for most of his time in power, correct?
That's correct.
In fact, it's the United States that provided Saddam Hussein with his chemical and biological weapons because we wanted him to use them against the Iranians once our puppet Shah king, if you will, of Iran was deposed. We didn't like the Iranians anymore, and so we provided Saddam Hussein, our ally, with chemical and biological weapons so that he could war with the Iranians. Is that also true?
That's also true, but let's add something else.
Yeah.
By deposing the Shah of Iran, again, they allowed the mullahs to take over. That's another mistake.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. If we go to back in time to Iran, there was a news item talking about an American that was with CIA on a CIA mission in Iran, and of course the United States disavowed him. But it was the CIA that clandestinely, immorally, removed a dictator from power in Iran and replaced him with the Shah. In other words, America says, we don't like the government that you picked, so we're going to pick our own government. And so we actually put the Shah into power, and we did so through the CIA launching a coup in Iran. So the Iranians did have a reason to be angry with us.
Yes, because they removed Mossadegh, who was elected fairly.
Right. Fairly, and we didn't like the democracy, so we removed him from power, and we established the Shah. And after a while, the Shah said, "You know, America really isn't the most reliable pal in the world. And if I continue to do the bidding of America, my own people are going to hate me." And so, what the Shah did is he began to nationalize gas and oil facilities, as did the Islamic leaders around him. And the America turned on him and said, well, if you're not going to do whatever we tell you to do, then we're not going to support you anymore. And so we essentially yanked him from power, knowing full well that the Ayatollah Khomeini would replace him.
Yes, but they didn't realize the extent of the damage. That's the trouble, the consequences of an event when you cannot estimate what the damage will be. Like, the devil you know is always better than the devil you do not know.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that what you have in the Islamic world is evil and unimaginable evil. And that's really what we're dealing with here. So in Iran, the CIA made a series of horrible blunders leading to the establishment of the Islamic Republic. And then we did the same thing with Saddam Hussein. We put him in power. We used him to wage war against Iran, keeping Iran, if you will, in his place. But when we invaded Iraq and we deposed Saddam Hussein, the majority of the people in Iraq were Shia Muslims, correct?
Correct. Two-thirds of the population is Shia Muslim.
Right. So the two ayatollahs in Iraq, who were the most influential individuals in Iraq once we deposed Saddam Hussein, they're both Iranians, aren't they?
Correct. Sistani is Iranian because Sistan is in Iran. So when they call him the Sistani, means he was born in Sistan of Iran.
So the Ayatollah al-Sistani is an Iranian mullah. He's, in other words, identical to the mullahs in Iran that are such a menace to the world. And we empowered him. And then there's also Sadar, which is the junior Ayatollah there. He's also a Shiite, but he's also from Iran. He is the one with the larger of the two militias, but not quite the religious following.
Muqtada Sadr is a terrorist. He's the head of terrorist organization.
Yeah. His Mahdi militia speaks of the Shiite Islamic claim that there will be this Messiah figure who's going to be this great warlord that's going to lead Shia Islam in the final quest conquest of the world. The only problem with that, of course, is that Shias only number 10% of Muslims. So when the United States invaded Iraq, which was based upon a lie. Saddam Hussein had not acquired vast quantities of yellowcake uranium from Nigeria. Isn't that true?
That is true, but Saddam Hussein played the game stupidly. He played a poker game. He put his rest, the totality of his income on the table, and it was a bluff. They called it a bluff, and they destroyed him.
Yeah. Yeah, Saddam Hussein would not deny that he had eliminated his chemical and biological weapons, which he had eliminated, because if he said that he had eliminated them, then he knew that Iran would attack and the Iranians would prevail over Iraq. So the only threat he had against the Iranians was the threat of chemical and biological weapons, which is why he never denied having destroyed them, which he, in fact, had previously done. So when we invaded Iraq, we took a country, you lived there at the time, that there were almost no terrorist events. In fact, the only terrorist event that we can even we even know about during the entire reign of Saddam Hussein was the gassing of the Kurd village. But that occurred solely in the context of the Iranian war. Isn't that also true?
That is true, of course. And the Kurds were Iraqi Kurds, they were not Iranian Kurds.
Yes.
So it was part and parcel of Iraq being destroyed.
Right. And what he did is that the Kurds who are abused in Iran, who are abused in Iraq, who are abused in Turkey, and what they're seeking is autonomy, they're really at war with all three countries' established governments. And so there were a number of Kurds that decided that, well, maybe if we side with the Iranians, we'll get some leverage over Saddam Hussein. And they did, and Saddam Hussein responded, and that's why that village was destroyed.
Correct. Yeah.
So You essentially, apart from the Iranian-Iraqi war, one that the United States was fighting as a surrogate war against Iran, you have no meaningful acts of terrorism being perpetrated by Saddam Hussein.
Well, Saddam Hussein is a dictator, or was a dictator. Every Muslim leader is a dictator.
Right.
Islam cannot tolerate democracy. They don't know anything about democracy. They do not understand democracy. And democracy is prohibited by both Quran, Sunnah, and Sharia.
Right.
So he was nothing special. And this is the standard life cycle of Islam. To have a very strong leader, a terroristic leader. See, how else could he have controlled Iraq for 35 years?
Now, that's not to say that there wasn't voting in Iraq. There was also voting in Turkey. It's just that the government controls all of the media, so everything that people can read and hear is controlled by the individual who's serving as the dictator, and they also control the police and the justice system, which means anybody that opposes them is imprisoned and tortured. So you can vote, it's just that your vote doesn't matter.
Of course, when you have 100% vote for Saddam Hussein, when any human being with a bit of intelligence would know it is impossible for any one person to garner even 51%.
Right.
But to get 100%, of course, it's fixed.
Right. So, standard of the mill Islamic dictator, but at least it was a functional country, and it was served as a buffer to the world conquest ambitions of the Persians in Iran.
Yes, he also was against the Muslim Brotherhood. He was against Sharia Islam. He was a secular Muslim, if you can call him a Muslim.
In fact, his greatest enemy, other than Iran, was Al-Qaeda, which during his reign, Al-Qaeda was a very significant presence in the Islamic terrorism world. And Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were archenemies.
Correct. That's why Saddam Hussein, whenever any imam or mullah or cleric tried to interfere politically, he had their head cut off instantly.
Yes. So what we have is a secular dictator over Iraq as a buffer both to the advances of Al-Qaeda and to the advances of the Shiite mullahs in Iran and their nuclear ambitions and world conquest. And we removed him from power. And now look at the consequence. We'll continue to examine the consequence when Shattering Myths continues. George W. Bush, who made the stupid decision to invade Iraq based upon a lie, in fact, two lies, maybe even three lies. Well, lie number one was that Saddam Hussein had purchased enormous amounts of yellow cake uranium from Nigeria, which he knew at the time was a lie. That Saddam Hussein was defiant in the retention of chemical and biological weapons, which also turned out to be a lie, and that Saddam Hussein was harboring Al-Qaeda. There was no Al-Qaeda presence of any kind in Iraq while Saddam Hussein was empowered. Isn't that true, IQ?
No. He was against Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda represents fundamentalist Islam. Saddam Hussein was secular. So they were not compatible.
As a matter of fact, Osama bin Laden, at the peak of his power, after prevailing against the Russian-backed government with the United States weapons in Afghanistan, once Saddam Hussein invaded the fundamentalist oil lands of Kuwait and deposed briefly the Kuwaiti emirs and was poised to then invade Saudi Arabia, both of which would have been good for America because it would have taken fundamentalist Muslims out of power and replaced them by a secular dictator. The fellow that went to the Saudis and said, let me drive him out of Kuwait and away from Saudi Arabia, the person that positioned for that honor, for that opportunity to war against Saddam Hussein was one Osama bin Laden. Isn't that true?
That, as far as I know, is true.
Yeah. That they were not only not allies, they were foes. They were enemies of one another. Their agendas were the antithesis of one another. Now, You go back 10 years ago, there was no Al-Qaeda presence in Iraq. Is there one now?
Oh, the whole of the western and northwestern part of Iraq is full of Al-Qaeda people.
And you know, while Al-Qaeda essentially doesn't exist in terms of a worldwide organization today, long after Osama bin Laden was holed up in his little Pakistani state, he ceased to have any influence over anybody. But because the brand that he created became a cause celeb in the fundamentalist Islamic world, there are Islamic terrorist groups that cited, even though they had no affiliation with Osama bin Laden, that they would use the notoriety of his brand. And so the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant is one of those terrorist organizations that has gained credibility in the fundamentalist Islamic world by leveraging that brand.
But every single Muslim, every single believing Muslim, has no choice but to be part and parcel of Al-Qaeda. It's not as if Al-Qaeda is controlling every Muslim in the world. They don't have to.
Right.
They're all reading the same scripture.
Right.
They are all reading the Quran. They are all reading the Hadith. And what does the Quran Hadith say? Destroy the infidels. Subjugate the infidels. Humiliate the infidels. Bankrupt them. Enslave them, rape them. I mean, what else can they? They can't do anything else. Every Muslim in America is a potential mass murdering terrorist or a traitor.
Yeah.
Sounds outrageous, but it isn't outrageous. You can say that, and I can say that. Why can't anybody else say it?
Yeah. So what you're saying is that the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant is reading from exactly the same constitution, that being the Quran, the same playbook, the Hadith, which it chronicles Muhammad's words and deeds, that are every other Muslim in the world.
Every 1,500 million Muslims have to read exactly the same scripture.
So,
since
Al-Qaeda was simply a fundamentalist Islamic group touting what the Quran and Hadith said, trying to live out the orders and example of Muhammad, the one connection between all these terrorist groups is not Osama bin Laden, it's Muhammad, it's the Quran.
Exactly. It's so simple. It really is so simple.
Okay, so
Osama bin Laden.
Right.
Nothing to do with the Bayt al-Maqdis, nothing to do with Jerusalem, nothing to do with Christianity, nothing to do with anybody. Every one of them is reading the same scripture. They're following Muhammad. They're emulating Muhammad. They are the clones of Muhammad. Hence, they are zombies, the living dead.
So is it possible to follow Muhammad's example and not be a terrorist?
Impossible. Impossible.
That's because Muhammad led and inspired 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. He was first and foremost a terrorist. In fact, he even said, "I have become victorious with terror." We'll return to Shattering Mist and consider the plight of Iraq, what we did to the world, the consequence of it, what it has led to, and where it will continue to lead when Shattering Mist continues with IQ Al-Rasuli. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. Before we entertain Jason's comment or question, he's calling in from Toronto with a statement or question for IQ Al-Rasuli. I'd like to put into context what is happening in Iraq as a direct result of the United States invasion. This year there will be 10,000 Iraqis murdered and 45,000 Iraqis mutilated by suicide bombers and other jihadist actions. That equates to 150 a day. Iraq is approximately 5% of the population of the United States, meaning that they are enduring the equivalent of a 9/11 terrorist attack per capita every single day. And only because America chose to break their country. And that's the smallest part of the consequence of our invasion. That said, Jason, my friend, welcome to Shattering Mist. You're on with IQ Al-Rasuli. Oh, goodness, Jason, yesterday we had a problem with our phone systems, and it appears that they did not fix the switchboard. I can't hear what you're saying. Okay. All right. We're going to try to fix the technical problem to get Jason on. But as an Iraqi IQ, this has got to tear your heart out.
Well, it's good fun.
150 people a day are murdered and mutilated by jihadist actions perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims.
Yeah,
and you know what's interesting here right now is this is principally now Sunnis killing the Shias because the Shias are oppressing Sunnis. What's going to happen when the Shias say, you know, we're going to respond?
They are responding. By the way, both of them are responding in a different way. They are exterminating the presence of Christianity in the Middle East. Both of them. So a consequence of all of this disaster, Arab Spring also, is the literal eradication of Christian presence in the Middle East. Literally.
Yeah, how many Christians were there in Iraq when you were there?
In 2003, 1.3 million. Today, less than 200,000.
So that is an annihilation. I mean, that's genocide.
It is genocide. In Syria, it's genocide. In Egypt, it's genocide. Well, in every single Muslim country today, there is an attack on Christians and the elimination of Christians. In fact, I said it before, the most persecuted religious group in the 21st century are Christians.
So the only way to differentiate Iraq in 2003 and Iraq today is the America invaded. And as a direct result of America's invasion of Iraq, Christians have been annihilated. Genocidal rage.
Yeah. It's collateral damage, they call it, I think.
Wow. So now, if we're looking at Iraq, 10,000 Iraqis will be killed by suicide bombers, and we have another 45,000 mutilated by fundamentalist Islam. That truly is just the tip of the iceberg, because what the United States did by giving Iraq to Iran is they facilitated, they actually started the Syrian war.
Not only the Syrian war. I mean, all these things are interconnected. The Arab Spring is part and parcel of what happened in Iraq. The Arab Spring is part and parcel of what happened in Iraq.
So it's what we let out of the jar is this realization that fundamentalist Muslims could rise up and gain power over their countries, and as a result of that, the Islamic world right now is a house on fire.
Yes, but America is still helping. America is still helping. Under Obama, they are helping the Ayatollahs to gain atomic weapons under Obama. I don't know where he is coming from. I mean, in fact, I know where he's coming from. I cannot understand why Congress is allowing it. Why American people are allowing the destruction of their future generations while they're standing there?
Well, for example, the Awakening Program in Iraq provided the weapons that armed the Shias now that are operating as Al-Qaeda, not only in Iraq, killing so many people, but also now in Syria. I understand we do have Jason calling in on a different line. If you can hear us, Jason, please share your question or comment.
Yeah, can you hear me, Yada?
Yes, we can. Yes, that's
okay,
much better.
Great. Hi, Yada IQ. I was glad you were talking there earlier about the fact that the fundamentalists and the terrorists are reading from the same textbook as our so-called, you know, moderate Muslims in the United States and, you know, other Western countries.
As you know, there's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. According to the Quran, you can't be moderate and be peaceful and be a Muslim. You cease to be a Muslim.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just wondering if, I had a couple questions. One was, I'd like to hear what you guys think the chances are that, say, a country where the population of Muslims is increasing, at least the ones we know as peaceful today, peaceful Muslims in, say, the United States, if their population is increasing in the United States, what are the chances that they're going to become more moderate or less fundamentalist with the, you know, the growth of their population and the increasing immigration?
By the way, it's zero probability.
Yeah.
The more immigrants you get, the more so-called fundamentalists they are.
Yeah.
It is impossible. It is impossible for a Muslim to integrate in any society which is Islamic. Look at them, they're killing each other in Muslim countries. In Europe, do you know what's happening? Scandinavian countries, especially Sweden, is allowing tens of thousands of so-called refugees from Syria without authenticating them. They are literally committing suicide. Yeah. Literally committing suicide.
And all those riots that took place in Sweden last year and earlier this year were all a direct result of Muslims burning cars, looting buildings, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. It's going to get much worse.
So, yeah, I would argue that what makes a Muslim peaceful is not ignorance, but just a lack of power and advantage.
At the moment, yes.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, when they are 1%, 2%, 3% of the population, they pretend they are part and parcel of the American dream. Look what happened in Boston. The two terrorists in Boston were there. They dressed American. They were taken by America. They were given health and education and everything. But what did they do? They turned on America. Not because they are evil. Not at all. No, they did it because they are following to the letter the commandments of the Quran. That's why you cannot possibly have a moderate Muslim. It is impossible. Impossible.
Yeah.
It's because Yada is saying it.
Yeah, if you're in it.
It's not because I say it. It's because the Quran says it.
Yeah. When you deal with a doctrine that is so vile as is Islam, so corrosive, so deadly, so destructive, that when the only way that you can be an adherent of that doctrine and not be corrosive to civilization is for you to be a very bad follower of that doctrine, then the problem is that the doctrine has to be eliminated. And, you know, it's like in Nazi Germany. Were there some Germans that were still decent people? Yes, so long as they weren't good Nazis. But if they were a good Nazi, they had to be eliminated for civilization to be able to endure and grow. The same thing is true with Islam. The only way that you can be a decent person as a Muslim is to be a bad Muslim. So the problem is Islam. And what happens is when the percentage of Muslims grows in any country, then it becomes more and more difficult for a Muslim to be a bad Muslim because they're indoctrinated with the fundamentalist nature of their religion. They come to embody as a group the life of Muhammad, and once they do that, it's over. Because Muhammad was a pedophile, a rapist, a thief, a kidnapper, a slave trader. And a ruthless terrorist. He was a mass murderer.
Yes. It really is very simple. This is the most remarkable thing. Yada studied it, researched it, and he wrote his book, Prophet of Doom. I did exactly the same thing from a different point of view. But any single human being, any decent human being with two brain cells of logic, reading the Quran, especially chapter 9, cannot come to any conclusion except that this is a vile Nazi-style book. It's vile.
Yeah, the same thing would be true if you read chapter 8 or chapter 5. Now, the problem with chapters 9 and chapter 5 is that they were the last two allegedly dictated by Muhammad, and therefore everything that they contradict that came earlier is thrown into oblivion. It's abrogated. It's only the last things that Muhammad said that prevail, and the ninth surah is the second to last revealed. And what the ninth surah and the fifth surah collectively do is they change the war that Muhammad was fighting against, principally against Jews, to a war against all humankind.
given what we, we're speaking about an increasing population of Muslims who will ultimately become more fundamentalist.
Yes.
It would be safe to say that someone who identifies themselves with Islam, whether they, even if they don't understand it, are still a threat.
Yeah, only tangentially. But keep in mind, Jason, that the entire Islamic world is becoming more fundamentalist. You know, when you look at elections that are taking place in almost any Islamic country, between 65 and 75% of the population is voting for the most fundamentalist Islamic candidates. Every poll that we take of the Islamic world reveals that that the vast majority of Muslims internationally are fundamentalists. I think that if you take a poll of Muslims in the United States, a minority of Muslims in the United States are fundamentalists because the population is so small as a percentage of the whole. But where Muslims congregate in large groups, they are universally fundamentalists. And I think when we return to Shattering Myths, we'll have IQ al-Rasuli speak of the realization that in Islamic countries, the preponderance of Muslims, almost three-quarters, are fundamentalists, and why that is the case. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. The question at the end of the last segment for IQ al-Rasuli is why in places where Islam is in control of the government, where Islam is the majority of the population, are the vast preponderance of Muslims now fundamentalists? Well, in a country like the United States, where the minority of the population is Muslim, is a significant percentage not fundamentalist. What do you think that is, IQ?
Fundamentalist Muslims are, well, let's put it this way. In the mosques, the clerics tell the followers of Muhammad, the cult belief system of Muhammad,
right,
that the reason Muslims are now secondary in productivity, in intellect, and in power is because they are not following Sharia 100%. It might sound ridiculous to people who are listening, but it's not ridiculous. They honestly believe, the man and woman in the street who are listening to the mullah or the imam, that the reason that they are second to Christianity, second in productivity to all humanity, is because they are not following the Quran totally. So what do? They go, as you said, fundamentalist, thinking that by going 100% to Sharia, they will excel. But in reality, the minute they go 100% to Sharia, they become the least productive, least inventive, least creative, and least logical in human history. And that's exactly what's happening. 1,500 million Muslims in 57 Muslim-majority states are the least productive, least inventive, least creative in human history. And anybody who wants to challenge me, please do so.
Yeah, and also the most violent. Can I add something to that? I think there's another reason. You know, when the Nazis in Germany represented 3% of the population and they were not empowered, they could terrorize people, but they could not control the population. When they were elected into power and then took control, then they could impose their doctrine on everyone, and if you were not a fundamentalist Nazi, you were killed. You're taken off to the concentration camps. In Russia, in around 1917, only about 3% of Russians were communists. And so while they were effective terrorists, abusing people, they couldn't control the population until they overthrew the government and they became the government, at which point they threatened the gulags to control everyone. You either were a fundamentalist communist or you were dead. And in an Islamic country, the mullahs and the kings, the dictators, impose draconian measures on those who don't toe the line. And so in an Islamic country, you are either a fundamentalist or you're dead. Where in a country where they don't have power, there's the opportunity to go along to get along.
Yes, but deceptively.
Well, of course.
It's deception. The American Muslims are deceiving Americans.
And themselves.
You know and I know. According to the Quran, they can never be loyal to the infidels. No. And according to the Quran and Hadith and Sharia, they cannot ever be subservient to a constitution which is man-made. Because American Constitution is not from Allah.
Correct. Now, we mentioned that that our invasion of Iraq destroyed the entire Middle East. I think it's worse than that because it is what caused the Syrian civil war. And in the Syrian civil war, you have Iran and therefore Russia and China as allies, and Saudi Arabia on the other side with Qatar and thus the United States and Europe. And so it's that war has the potential of not only unstabilizing the entire Islamic world, but also of drawing the entire world into world war. In fact, Obama almost lit the trigger when he wanted to bomb Syria.
Syria.
So we're on the precipice. I mean, we're really the catalyst for World War III is blazing brightly as a direct result of our invasion of Iraq.
Yes, but I mean, okay, when somebody made a mistake 10, 11 years ago,
right,
why continue it now? Obama, with his so-called treaty with Iran, is setting the stage for a nuclear war.
Correct. Because, you know, when you look at what Iran gave up, they gave up nothing. They absolutely gave up nothing for 6 months, and they gained $7.5 billion just in release of funds plus the ability to sell their petrochemicals on the world market. They gained everything. They lost absolutely nothing. And so what it was is the absolute guarantee that Iran will not only have a nuclear bomb, but the financial capability of deploying it. IQ, thank you for being part of the program today.
Thank you.
And I hope more people heed his warning that if we don't stand up to Islam, Islam will destroy everything that we hold dear. This is Yetta. You've been listening to Shattering Mist. Talk to you next week.